The Athletic.
After serving an 8-month ban for betting breaches, this weekend, Ivan Toney returns.
It's Brentford trying to create another one, and they certainly have taken it. Ivan Toney is in there, lurking with intent.
Yet after so long on the sidelines, is he already eyeing an exit from Brentford?
It's obvious that I'd like to play for a top club. Everybody wants to play for the top clubs, fighting for titles and these kind of things. So whether it's this January, the right time was to be, a club was to come in and pay the right money, who knows?
Given that he's been out for so long, should Toney even be talking about moving? Or should he concentrate on regaining his form and repay the support of the Brentford fans? I'm Ayoakim Olere. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. Today we've got the Athletic's Brentford writer Jay Harris, as well as our senior football writer Ollie Kay as well. Right, let's start with this tweet that Ivan Toney dropped saying, "I'm free after 8 months away." How do we feel this moment has been leading up to, Jay? Because I know you've been covering Ivan Toney for a while and you've been covering Brentford for a while. This is a big one for Brentford, considering where they are in the league.
Yeah, this is huge for Brentford and it's huge for Toney. I think people haven't forgotten, but this time a year ago, he was getting called up for England and he made his debut for England against Ukraine in March. And this ban has completely stalled his career. I think that's the perfect way to describe it. He'd scored 20 goals in the Premier League last season. Only Haaland and Harry Kane got more. And he was the talk of the town. And this 8-month ban has kind of completely stopped that momentum. And for Brentford, the first couple of months of the season, they actually did all right without him. Brian Mbeumo was playing really well. And, you know, I'm pretty certain I wrote the article at one point that maybe Brentford played better without Ivan Toney. That's definitely changed in the last few weeks. You know, Brentford have lost 5 games in the league in a row. They got knocked out of the FA Cup on Tuesday night against Wolves. They're struggling with so many injuries. And it just feels like everything's building up to this Saturday against Nottingham Forest, an evening kickoff. And it just feels like this is Toney's moment to prove that he's not lost any of his magic after 8 months out, but also to kind of lift Brentford and fire them away from trouble.
Yeah, I was just thinking, Ollie, you know, they've got a player here who, I mean, it could go either way, really, you think about it. This could rejuvenate a player who was actually in really good form before he actually got given the ban, but also it probably take him a little bit of time to get ready for the Premier League and hit the ground running.
I think what you'd expect is for him to come flying out on Saturday and sort of and untethered and just come flying out and charging around on adrenaline and be inspired and be fully driven, fully motivated, and probably for some kind of tiredness to kick in at some point, whether that's second half on Saturday or whether it's, you know, 2 or 3 games down the line. But I think as Jay says, I mean, Brentford didn't miss him at first. They've really missed him lately. I think they will be putting so much hope in his return, and so will he. And I could see him hitting the ground running and potentially slowing down again at some point after that, because he's taking time physiologically, I suppose, to get back up to speed. But I think it couldn't have come at a better time for Brentford. No, that's complete rubbish. The better time would have been after missing 2 or 3 games or none at all. But no, they will be desperate to have him back and firing.
I should say quickly, just for a bit of background context, Toney returned to training in September. So for people that aren't aware, he wasn't allowed to go to Brentford's training ground for the first 4 months of his 8-month ban. The only time he was allowed to visit the training ground was to rehab the hamstring injury he picked up in his last competitive game, which was against Liverpool at Anfield in May. And that September morning, when he returns to the training ground, he has a couple of meetings with Thomas Frank that week. Brentford's owner Matthew Benham actually rocked up at the training ground that week to watch training, and he tends to only visit once a month, so I feel like that was quite a big thing. They come up with this 16-week plan, and throughout the whole process, Thomas Frank was talking about, we've got a really strange opportunity here because he's not injured. He's going to be fully fit the entire time he's out. So we can work on different things. So, you know, he spent time in Nashville working on his finishing with his finishing coach called Alan Russell, who used to be on England's coaching staff. And in the last few weeks, he's been playing in loads of behind-closed-doors friendlies because he's allowed to as part of the ban. And It's difficult to draw too many conclusions because he's been scoring in all these behind closed doors.
I saw the hat trick in the B team. I saw that against Southampton. I saw that.
But it did make me laugh because he scores this hat trick against Southampton's under 23s. And I think there was, you know, a sulky Southampton fan who said, oh, well done. You're scoring against 14-year-olds. But I think the very fact that he's so determined to build up his fitness and he's been doing all these extra things is an encouraging sign. So I very much feel like he'll start on Saturday. I really don't think that's in doubt. And look, he might not score, but I think he'll cause a lot of problems and it will kind of be as if he's never been away.
That business of him being not allowed to go to the training ground for months at the start of his ban, I think that's quite disgusting. Why are you denying somebody the opportunity to go to their place of work? You're banned from playing football, right? But you don't have to ban somebody from going to the training ground and feeling part of that setup and part of a team and enjoying as much normality as possible. I don't think you need to punish somebody on that bigger scale. I think the FA really need to look at their punishments. I would much rather they were much more educational on gambling rather than this very stern, strict approach where someone can't even train. I think that really needs looking at.
I think you're right. And fundamentally, you're dealing with an addiction, Ollie, right? Like, it's not just the gambling, it's an addiction. And actually, with all the movements that have been had with dealing with addiction and looking at it and the symptoms that surround addiction, perhaps the FA could have looked at it in a much more holistic, new school way, realistically.
And if I can just jump in, I don't know what the perfect punishment was for the 232 breaches that he did. But I think it is important to contextualise that he was asked multiple times by the FA about whether he had gambled or not. And the first two occasions when he was first interviewed by them, he said that he didn't do it. So I think potentially one of the reasons why he got quite a lengthy punishment was because it wasn't until the disciplinary hearing much further down the line where he kind of admitted to these breaches. So I think we should say that first of all. But having said that, the 4 months away from your teammates did feel cruel. Trying to imagine if I was banned from coming to the athletic offices for 4 months, what I'd kind of do and what I'd say. And, you know, Tony was being interviewed by Sky Sports News last week and he kind of said, I couldn't watch football for 2 months. And Tony goes on to say, I like watching every Premier League game. He used to play in League One. So he says, I like watching League One games. I just couldn't do it for 2 months. I think the support he got from Brentford was really helpful. You know, the director of football, Phil Giles, kind of told him straight away, take as much time as you need, go on holiday. So I think Tony went to Mykonos, Morocco, Ibiza, Dubai. He had that time away from the game where he could switch off, he could process things. He's got a really supportive family. And then he's got really supportive manager in Thomas Frank, who I think is very emotionally intelligent. You know, Christian Norgaard, who's Brentford's captain, has sat him down and had discussions with him. So I think the punishment was harsh. Like I said, I don't know what the perfect punishment would have been, but I think he's quite, maybe lucky is not the right word, but he has benefited from having a really supportive club, teammates and manager around him, which I'm sure has made the situation a little bit more bearable.
Yeah, and I think there'll be a lot of anger at the way he's been treated. I think he'll be fairly resentful about the fact he's had such a long ban. We've seen it before, Kieran Trippier, slightly different issue, but he got a long ban, was it 3 months, a few seasons ago, and felt pretty indignant about that and was sort of came back angry with a point to prove. I think that can be good as long as you channel your anger and aggression and determination in the right way. It sounds like Ivan Toney has been doing absolutely everything in terms of the sports science, preparation, conditioning, etc., to make sure he's in the right frame of mind and right frame physically as well. So I think anger and desperation to make up for lost time are all going to be factors here. And I think as long as channeled properly, that they are good things to be fueled by.
Sandro Tonali is obviously banned for betting as well. And it's a slightly different situation. And he was banned by the Italian Football Federation. But as part of his punishment, he has to make 16 public appearances in Italy at, you know, amateur clubs, training centres, addiction charities. I don't know if Tony's done that personally in his own time. Maybe he has, but that wasn't mandated by the FA. So I think that is definitely one thing that maybe they should look at.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwolere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Well, Ivan Toney has no shortage of admirers. I imagine pretty much every team in the Premier League likes his qualities and would be interested in signing him if he was available and the money was right. That final point is the biggest problem because finances are in short supply. If we're to go through the teams who have been linked to him, you look at Arsenal. Right now, with their profitability and sustainability position, I don't think it's something they would be able to do. Manchester United, another club who perhaps will be looking to bring in another centre-forward at some point. They are not in a position to do so for pretty much the same reason as Arsenal. Chelsea are another who are rumoured to have been in the frame, but I've consistently reported that I don't think he's quite the profile that they would be looking at. And again, the numbers would need to work. So one by one, we go through them and largely we're coming out with the same conclusion. And so I could very easily see this going on until the summer, and then we'll be back in this conversation again. And I wouldn't completely rule out free agency in 2025. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it shouldn't be discounted. But we can only speak on what we know at this moment in time. And that is that it's looking most likely that he will be staying for now, and that those clubs that like him will have to maybe address this at a later date or look for alternative candidates. If that proves to be the case, then you assume the big winners would be Brentford, who get the use of him for longer, and they will hope that he helps them have a really strong second half of the season and maybe even a little bit longer.
Well, that was The Athletic's David Ornstein there with the state of play in the transfer market when it comes to Ivan Toney, who hasn't been shy in making his intentions known, actually. Well, to gauge the mood amongst Brentford fans, I caught up with the co-editor of Besotted, Billy the B. Grant. Billy, well, there's one name on the lips of everyone in football right now, and it's Ivan Toney. I want to start to talk to you about a particular interview that dropped on Sky. Something that really stuck out with me was the line that you can never predict when it's the right time to move. It's obvious I want to play for a top club. What do you make of that comment?
When you hear him say something like that in that clip, naturally you're going to be disappointed, because what they've done is that they've clipped, what, a 30 seconds from a 16-minute interview, and they've put it out there, and of course they know they're going to get the bites, okay? Ivan Toney says, I want to move on and play for a big side. The reality is, I would love Ivan Toney to play for us forever, okay? But that's not going to happen, because he plays for Brentford, and the way that we operate is we get the players in, we buy them for cheap, easy £5 million, we build them up, we develop them, and then it gets to the stage where the bigger clubs come in, and they come in and play a whole heap of money, and then we take that money, reinvest it, spend a little less, spend a fraction of that money, and they build themselves up again. So as Brentford fans, we've had about 10 years to get used to this. So we're used to our players leaving and other players joining. So what he said wasn't a surprise to us. And also he was answering the question from the interviewer. He actually answered it kind of truthfully. If any other player, like I said, who played for, you know, Luton Town, and they said, listen, if you were given 100 million a week to sign for one of the biggest clubs, would you do it? And they said, no, I'm going to stay at Luton. You know they're going to be lying. So I'm not sticking up for him, but I'm just saying he said what he's going to say. We all knew he's going to say what he's going to say. But also he also said a lot of things about being excited to be back to play for Brentford. Can't wait to get back scoring goals. And that's what we expect. And I expect him to be there on January the 31st. But if somebody comes in with a wheelbarrow with £100 million worth of cash, then things might be different.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to ask a really more pragmatic question, really, in terms of where Brentford are currently sitting in the league. What, 16th, I think you guys are at this moment in time. And, you know, it's fair to say you've missed his goals. You've had a fair few injury issues as well. Are you confident that Ivan Toney is going to come back the same kind of player as we saw before he was banned from football.
Listen, one of our crew, his sons actually, has just bought a flat just behind the ground, you know, them new flats. So yeah. He's been watching all the closed season games with Ivan Toney scoring all his goals. So the reports are coming back that he's looking pretty good, to be quite honest with you. For us, there's a catalogue of things that have kind of have added to where we are now. And the irony is actually, we were actually coping without Ivan Toney. Not saying that we didn't miss him, but we were doing all right. And then all of a sudden, Brian Mbeumo gets injured. Rico Henry, first of all, get injured. And that killed us. And then Brian Mbeumo gets injured as well. That's killed us. You know, just right. You know what I'm saying? So the problem is that we need to sort the defence out because we're still creating the chances. And I really reckon it's not going to be a problem. So now you put Ivan Toney into the mixer and you've got more of a chance of scoring the goal. So I've never really been worried about it. I'd be more worried about us sorting out defence. And Ivan Toney's in, but Reguilon is also in, and he's going to be equally as massive in our side because he's going to help sort out and regulate. You saw how I did that. I didn't even practice that one earlier, and I'm saying, right, he's going to regulate us to make sure that we actually, our defence is a little bit operating on a normal level because it's been a little bit all over the place at the time. So trust me, Ivan coming back, he's going to give us a big boost.
I tell you what, you need to get to the Brentford DJ. So Regulin comes on, Regulate by Warren G plays as he steps on the field, just to get you ready.
I've got a phone call in right now, you know what I'm saying?
Straight on. All right, honestly, cheers, Billy. I really appreciate it.
Okay, nice one.
Yeah, I mean, Billy there clearly wanting Ivan Toney to stay, but, you know, inevitably, he's quite pragmatic in terms of how Brentford do their dealings. And I guess it's a matter of when he goes, Jay. This is also a player that's, you know, changed management, which often signals, you know, it's probably time to jump ship.
Yeah. So Thomas Frank actually said a couple of weeks ago, Ivan Toney would be staying in January, speaking about, you know, it'd take an unbelievable price for him to go. I should probably say that Thomas Frank has been asked a question about Ivan Toney, I think, in every single press conference since the ban. He's been asked about his future on so many occasions. But I think Brentford were always very clear that ideally they wanted to keep Ivan Toney for the final 6 months of the season. As David Ornstein's just explained, some of the potential suitors who would be interested in him, it's going to be difficult for them to kind of find the financial wriggle room to do that. And as we touched on at the beginning of the pod, if Brentford were sitting pretty in the top half of the table and there was a club who made a real push for him this month, maybe that scenario could have happened. But they're 3 points above the relegation zone and they've lost 5 games in a row. So the money that Brentford would earn from staying in the Premier League is way more than the money they could get for Ivan Toney. So I think he'll stay till the summer. And then I think it almost feels inevitable at this point that he will go. But where that is, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, Ollie, I mean, can you feasibly see him going in January, considering where Brentford are currently sitting in the league?
I think for all the reasons that that Jay mentioned and David mentioned, no, I'd be really surprised if he were to go in January. There isn't really much transfer money swirling around the Premier League at the moment. A lot of clubs are very close to their spending limits, which we know after the past few weeks and few months that spending limits do actually matter and clubs have to comply with them. So, yeah, I would be surprised if he went, and I don't think it would be in Brentford's interest at all to sell him, even if they got a great offer. I think if they did, then that great offer would still be there in the summer, frankly. I was just wondering from another point of view, I mean, does Ivan Toney owe Brentford a debt of gratitude in terms of everything they've done to support him through this? Or is that a really old-fashioned, naive argument?
Me personally, I don't think he does have a massive debt to pay for the club. When you kind of take a step back, they signed him 3 seasons ago. His goals are a big reason why they got promoted to the Premier League. I think it was the first time they've been in the top flight for 75 years or something like that. So firstly, he's done that. So he'll always be remembered as a special player at the club for that achievement. Then he scores the goals that keep them in the Premier League. Then he scores the goals that make them finish ninth. And I think they only missed out on qualifying for the Europa Conference League by 2 or 3 points. So I think everybody had maybe thought, you know, he's been phenomenal for 2 seasons in the Premier League, 3 seasons at Brentford overall. We wouldn't begrudge him leaving. It's just the fact that you've got this slightly strange situation. Every time I've spoken to a Brentford fan for the last 6 months since Ivan Toney got banned, they've said, oh, he'll never play for us ever again. He'll go in January. Oh, there's no chance, you know, he's gone. So I actually think they'd already come to peace with that. And so the fact that they've probably got him for another 4 or 5 months is a bonus, if anything. Because also it's all about Brentford's model. Brentford have recovered from selling players of a similar quality to Ivan Toney before, and they've used that cash to fund the next, I guess, generation of their squad. It happened with Benrahma and Watkins. You know, they lost the Championship Player Final and sold their two best players and then got promoted the following season. That's an incredible achievement. They've done it with Konsa, they've done it with Scott Hogan, they've done it so many times over the years that Brentford fans just think a little bit differently. I even see some of them say, cash in on him in January so he can sign the next couple of players, which I don't think is the smartest view. I understand why people say Ivan Toney owes Brentford, but I don't think he does massively. But having said that, it is good to know that he will be there for a few more months. And I guess he can give the fans a nice lasting memory of him, and their final memory of him is not, you know, at some, you know, random game against Liverpool away from home last season, that, you know, he'll get the chance to play at the GTEC Community Stadium in front of those fans again.
My point was more that around January, just that it wouldn't have been a good look if he'd come back after 8 months out, returning to a relegation threatened team, and was sort of rocking the boat, say, right, I'm available now and I want to move. And he's not doing that. I mean, he spoke quite openly in an interview. I think it's probably in everybody's interests for him to stay put in January. I remember when Rio Ferdinand came back from a 8 month ban at Manchester United, remember the missed drugs test back in 2003-04, came back, and quite soon after that he was in a contract dispute with the club, and it was felt that he was sort of playing the club a bit, and it went down very badly with United's fans.
Mm. Well, you sort of just seeing a player who's clearly chomping at the bit, and it's fair to say Ivan Toney has confidence in himself and his ability. You look at the interview with Sky Sports, and you know, he was saying, you know, you can never predict when it's the right time to move. It's obvious I want to play at a top club. I was listening to the interview he did, Dara of his CEO, a few months ago. He mentioned again, you know, want to play for a top club. This is a player who knows his next steps, and I guess it's a matter of when. And at 28, you would like to think that time is imminent, Jay.
Firstly, I don't begrudge him saying that he wants to leave at some point. I remember interviewing David Raya, I think it was this time last year. Raya hadn't signed a contract extension, and Raya said the exact same thing, and the Brentford fans didn't get particularly upset about that. Obviously, they were sad about the prospects of him leaving, but they, like I kind of said, because of Brentford's model, they'd kind of accepted it. I think the thing which sometimes people don't realise with Ivan Toney, and I've written about this before, is that I feel like his career's kind of been defined by constantly overcoming rejection. So when he's 14 years old, he doesn't get a scholarship from Leicester City's academy. He gets picked up by his boyhood club, Northampton Town, earns a move to Wolves, but oh wait, he fails the medical. Then he gets this grand move to Newcastle, who are in the Premier League at the time. And I think by his own admission, he thought he'd pretty much made it at that point. I think he was only 19 years old. He obviously goes on multiple loans to League Two clubs, League One clubs. And I think it's fair to say some players don't come back to the top from that. They drop down to those levels and they're never really heard of at the top again. So to kind of move to Peterborough in League One and rebuild his career to the point where he has played for England once and he's the third top scorer in the Premier League last season, he'll be thinking, I want to prove people that I do belong at the top, that everybody who doubted me 6-7 years ago was wrong. And so I completely understand why he feels like, I've played for Brentford for 3-4 seasons and I've got them promoted. Now it's my time to play for a top six club. But I think maybe the only counter argument from Tony's perspective for him leaving Brentford in January would be that, you know, he's very public about the fact he wants to go to the European Championship this summer. Would playing for a team that's in the Champions League have given him a greater chance of doing that, potentially? But then you run the risk that if he doesn't perform particularly well over the next few months, will clubs be deterred from splashing out on him in the summer? It's a strange situation.
I'm with you on that one. And I guess if he does make it to the Euros, and we'll talk about this a little later on, his marketability, Ollie, I mean, stronger position for Brentford. You look at, you know, moves for Shearer and Rooney after the Euros, you know, really pivotal times for the change in trajectory in their careers.
Yeah, it's that idea of a shop window, I suppose. But I guess if we're talking about a role as England's backup centre forward, you know, whether it's Ollie Watkins or Callum Wilson or Toney, Solanke, whoever, I don't think they're going to sort of force their way ahead of Harry Kane as a starting centre forward, all being well. It's hard to sort of excel in a way that would make you add another £40-50 million to your transfer valuation or whatever. But it's the clubs know what they would be getting with Ivan Toney. I think some will be absolutely convinced that he's the man for them if they can find the money to do it in the summer. And some will think, well, he doesn't quite suit our style. And I don't really think the Euros would massively change opinions on that, unless perhaps it was interest from beyond these shores, you know, interest from Italy, Germany, Spain, wherever. There is now a big market and interest in English players.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
Let's talk about his return. Obviously, Brentford play Nottingham Forest on Saturday. And we've written about this, and I know you've written about it, Jay. I mean, on a psychological level, you could also look at this in a really interesting and I guess refreshing way, because you've had time for perspective to come back into the league. You're chomping at the bit because you just want to be part of the action. Do we have a sense of how we feel that game might go on Saturday? I mean, he might not even start. Let's face it.
Like I said earlier, I'm pretty convinced he will start. I could be wrong, but that's just my feeling, having covered the club for a long period of time. I think he'll, like I kind of touched upon earlier, in terms of the behind closed doors games he's been playing in, the extra strength and conditioning work, you know, this sort of like finishing school in Nashville, Tennessee that he's gone to. I think he's going to come back and hit the ground running. And I do think, yeah, taking that time out of the game means he is coming back a little bit mentally refreshed. That was kind of the whole point of him being given, not given that time off by the club, but being encouraged by the club to kind of take that time off. So I think I know Ollie mentioned it earlier, there might be a crash and burn in a couple of weeks' time, but I think this Saturday, I think he'll start and I think he'll have a huge impact. But I was talking to another colleague of ours earlier this morning who did point out that Tony's obviously flourished in the Premier League playing alongside Johan Visser, Brian Mbeumo and Kevin Nshada for Brentford. Visser scoring goals for DR Congo at AFCON, and Mbeumo's out injured with an ankle injury for another couple of months, and Kevin Nshada's injured as well. So he'll be coming back to a team that looks very different and is in a very different place confident-wise. So actually, it might be harder for him to kind of replicate those performances he did this time a year ago.
Yeah. Well, we touched on it earlier in terms of England. Does he still have enough time to make that Euro 2024 squad? I know he missed out on the Qatar 2022 and he's also been openly critical of the FA, as he said, on the diary of the CEO. But when it does come to competition for this England place, I mean, look at the names. We mentioned it earlier. Ollie Watkins, potential competition. Callum Wilson can't stay fit. Tammy Abraham. It's been a quite dodgy season for him at Roma. Dominic Solanke is one of the names that have been floated around in there. If you're Ivan Toney right now, you're thinking, I don't know, that there's potentially a slim chance here, Ollie.
I think there's definitely a chance. I mean, he was in the squad just before his ban, wasn't he? It was very close to the ban. So Southgate clearly rates him. But I would say when you look at the strikers we've mentioned, it's Ollie Watkins, Callum Wilson, Solanke, Abraham, Calvert-Lewin and Ketia, who was in the squad earlier this season, Ivan Toney. I think it's really hard to establish a real clear pecking order amongst those players as sort of backup to Harry Kane. What Southgate has done is generally go, I know everyone says Southgate never goes with players in form. I think what he's done with the strikers and the backup striker role is generally gone with the player who is in form. And that was Callum Wilson going into the World Cup. It was Toney at one point last season. If you were going to do it a month ago, it would probably be Ollie Watkins. You could probably make a case for Dom Solanke now because he's playing brilliantly as well. So although there is a situation vacant in terms of there not being a really established backup for Kane, there is also a sense that there is real competition for that place. So you've got to be the one who's really, really making a strong case. I would say Solanke and Watkins have made really strong cases this season. So they are setting a standard which Toney is going to have to come back and show he can measure up to and potentially surpass. And that's not going to be easy. But yeah, I do think the door is open.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for sure. I think one thing which helps him out slightly is that Southgate's actually been quite publicly supportive of Toney throughout this whole situation. I remember when the ban was announced, Southgate kind of came out immediately and said,
I have spoken with him. I don't know if that's allowed, by the way, but if it isn't, then they can ban me and not add to his.
If you remember, Toney got called up to the England squad just before the World Cup. I think it was in September, and then missed out on the squad. And I think Southgate basically said he hadn't really seen enough of him to quite know how it would gel with some of the other players in the team for him to get called up. So I think if Tony has any chance of getting into the Euro squad this summer, he needs to perform well enough in the next 4 weeks, 5 weeks to get called up for the squad in March. I don't know if he'll go straight from not playing, not getting called up to March to getting called into the Euro squad. But like I said, I think Southgate's public backing of him or support of him helps him out. But as Ollie mentioned, the pedigree up front is fierce. And I just look at some of those players and think, what do they offer that Tony can't? And what does Tony offer that they can't? Obviously, Tony's got that physical presence. He's very good in the air. But then obviously, Watkins and Wilson maybe are a little bit quicker. Watkins especially, he can kind of run in behind. So it all just depends on, without getting into the minutiae, if you're making a squad to win a tournament, you need to have players with different skill sets for different scenarios. You can't take too many players who are the exact same. And I worry if Tony's skill is that he's almost too similar to Kane. And so you'd almost need a scenario where Kane gets injured for Tony to go. Hope that makes sense.
Just a final one and a bit more of a silly one for me, but it's probably still early to say. David Ornstein went through a lot of those Premier League clubs that could potentially be in for Tony or not, whether his profile fits them or not. We'll start with you, Jay. Where's a likely destination for you if you're Ivan Tony in the Premier League right now? There's a few teams that need a striker. He's probably got a choice of a few. Where would you want to be going, ideally?
You're going to get me in trouble with all the Brentford fans. What I've always told people is that I feel like if Sir Alex Ferguson was still in charge of Man United, he would have signed Tony in a heartbeat. I'm waiting for the nod from Ollie. It's not happened yet. But I don't know. let's just something that I feel like Fergie had a really good kind of reputation of kind of taking players from maybe teams lower down in the table, mid-table range, and just turning them and taking them up another level. And I always felt like it was a little bit naive of Man United to think that they could only rely on Hoyland as their main forward option for the foreseeable future, because he's so young and he'd kind of had this explosion within 18 months. But before then, people hadn't thought that highly of him, I think it's fair to say. And I just thought that if... I know it would have been very expensive, but kind of having Tony and Hoyland in rotation would have been really good for them. Obviously, Tony's talking about a club that wants to win titles, and Man United are in such a strange state at the moment. Maybe he would look at that and think, I'd much rather go to an Arsenal. It certainly feels like everybody thinks that's where he's going to end up. And I certainly understand it. And I think he'd be a success there. So I think that's my, without giving you a direct answer, I've given you my thoughts on it.
There's a couple of teams there, Ollie.
Yeah, I think there are probably teams you can discount. I would discount Manchester City on there's no vacancy, partly on sort of style grounds. I would probably discount Liverpool, again, on sort of style grounds and perhaps age, given their sort of recruitment strategy. Arsenal seems to be the one that everybody talks about, and I could see that. But I also think there might be less of an adjustment style-wise if he were to go to, say, Chelsea or Manchester United, where there are, I don't know, it just feels like more of a blank canvas. It feels to me like those two clubs, this is an insult really, but there isn't really a clear playing style. So if they sign somebody like Ivan Tony, a big physical and yes, extremely gifted centre forward, they can build around that. Whereas if you have that sort of player parachuted into Arsenal's team, it might be an adjustment. So I also think there's abroad might be an appealing option. I think there could be different options abroad. I also think if you're a Brentford fan, as Jay says, you're probably tearing your hair out at this point and thinking, will you shut up? Because they've done brilliantly to identify his talent and find him as initially as a Championship player, then as a Premier League player. He has thrived in an environment where so many other players have thrived. It's not just about spotting a good player and putting them in a team and it works. It needs to be a really good setup to be able to accommodate all these players that Brentford have picked up from here, there and everywhere.
Like you said, Ivan Tony was playing in League One a couple of seasons ago, and Brentford, Thomas Frank, everybody else at the club have kind of had that faith in him and learned how to get the best out of his talent. And if Brentford stay in the Premier League and Tony scoring the goals that keep them up, and he goes in the summer, I think everybody will be happy with that scenario.
Yeah, for sure. Gents, thanks so much for your time. Let's end it there, Jay and Ollie. Please remember to rate and review the podcast as you have already. If you're enjoying it, let us know. £2 or $2 a month for 12 months. That's how much it costs to subscribe. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to the Athletic Football Podcast. The producers were Adonis Pratsides and Guy Clark, with additional production by Mike Stavro and Jay Beale. The executive producer was AD Moorhead. To listen to other great Athletic Football podcasts for free, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual places. The Athletic Football Podcast is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.